Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington, D.C. The European Union and the United States of America signed an agreement about an initiative that includes development projects in Africa.
Through this initiative, we want to electrify Africa, because we know that still 600 million people are without access to electricity in that continent.
Nigerian groups call on the international community to pressure the Electoral Commission to ensure the upcoming elections are free, transparent, and credible.
The reason why we wrote is nothing but to ensure they mount sufficient pressure on INEC that the next year's presidential election is conducted in a free and credible manner.
And the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, says its lawyers will challenge in court a decision of the Electoral Commission of Zambia to proceed with administering by-elections in the Kabushi and Kwacha constituencies.
The Zambian people are equally perturbed by the impunity with which the Electoral Commission of Zambia are trying to conduct themselves.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The European Union and the United States of America signed this week a memorandum of understanding regarding an initiative related to energy and development in Africa. It comes as Jutta Urpilainen, the European Commissioner for International Partnership, visits Washington. She is scheduled to meet U.S. government officials as well as attend the annual meeting of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund. The discussions during the visit focus on European Union efforts to improve global food security and international development. So far, the EU commissioner met with administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, Samantha Power. To learn more about the agreement signed between the EU and the U.S., I reach Jutta Urpilainen via Skype. Urpilainen's portfolio includes fostering EU partnerships to reduce global poverty and to support sustainable development. In part one of the interview, she talks about the upcoming summit between U.S. President Joe Biden and his counterpart from the European Union.
First of all, we are very happy to be able to sign this memorandum of understanding. I think it's a very good example of our deepening cooperation with the U.S. aid. Through this initiative, we want to electrify Africa, because we know that still 600 million people are without access to electricity in that continent. So this is now a framework, in a way, for our cooperation in terms of energy. And the next step and the next stage will be defining a concrete projects in different African countries, where we can then see whether we want to electrify hospitals or schools, or different public services, and then, you know, we have to also define that how we are going to finance them.
Commissioner Jutta, what's the next step after the signing of this agreement, and when will the implementation begin?
We are entering into a phase where we are defining concrete projects. And President Biden and President von der Leyen from the European Commission, they are going to organize a summit on infrastructure in November. And I think already in that summit, hopefully, we will hear about the concrete projects, not only for Africa, but globally, because we have a commitment under the, I would say, in G7, we made a commitment for $600 billion infrastructure projects globally. And this global gateway, 200 million euros, 300 million euros is part of that commitment. I know that US, United States has its own infrastructure initiative, and there is idea to mobilize 200 billion euro dollars for that. So that, you know, my idea is, and my main message is, that in terms of Africa and in terms of energy, European Union is already actively defining a concrete projects, and I'm hoping that already next year we would be in a situation where we can start to deliver a very very concrete projects in Africa.
Commissioner Yuta, what is the anticipated impact of this agreement that you've signed?
Well, I see that it is a kind of example of our deepening cooperation in general, because we have, with the Biden administration, we have worked very closely in terms of COVID-19 crisis. We wanted to accelerate, for instance, vaccine delivery. We wanted to strengthen the healthcare systems in Africa. So I think, you know, we started to work closely at the time of COVID. And then now relating to food security, we are also working in order to see that how we can strengthen the food production capacity in African countries. So I would say that is another area where we are deepening our cooperation.
You talked about food security. Now, in terms of the cooperation to ensure or bolster food security on the continent in Africa, what other areas will the cooperation be? Will there be technological transfer? Will there be sharing of ideas with mechanized farming, irrigation farming, so food security can be entrenched in Africa?
It will be all that. We made a financial commitment of 7.7 billion euros for food security until year 2024. And part of that, around 2 billion euros, is humanitarian assistance. But the majority of the funding actually goes to food production, so that we really want to strengthen the resilience of Africa so that they could be more independent and produce more food for their citizens. I think I have to say that I was a bit struck by the fact in the middle of the COVID that Africa imports 99% of the vaccines it uses. And that's why we wanted to create an initiative through which we want to strengthen the production capacity and manufacturing capacity in Africa.
Join us tomorrow for the conclusion of the interview with Yuta Ipilainen, the European Commissioner for International Partnerships. In Nigeria, civil society and opposition political parties are calling on the international community to pressure the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, to ensure the upcoming elections in February are free, transparent and credible. This after the non-partisan NGO called International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety, petitioned U.S. government officials, stakeholders and other civil rights organizations to help ensure Nigerians can choose their leaders without any voter manipulation. The group says its investigations show the upcoming polls can be manipulated if not conducted in a transparent way. To avoid this, the group says the international community should be vigilant and monitor activities of INEC. Nigerians go to the polls in 4 months to choose local, state and federal representatives, including the president. For more about concerns over alleged plans to manipulate the elections, I reach Emeka Omiagbalasi. He is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law.
Thank you so much. The reason why we wrote the top U.S. functionaries, government functionaries, and the key U.S. lawmakers, as well as the top officials of the National Democratic Institute, the National Republican, International Republican Institute, and the National Endowment for Democracy, is nothing but to ensure that they mount sufficient pressure on INEC, Nigerian's INEC, to ensure that the next year's presidential election is conducted in a free, fair, inclusive, popular and credible manner.
But Emeka, some people are saying that for the two organizations, including yours, to petition outsiders or international community to pressure INEC to organize credible election is really calling for the interference of the internal political dynamics of Nigeria, and by so doing, its sovereignty, and that this is unpatriotic and un-Nigerian. How do you respond to that?
Maybe those people are bereft of what democracy is all about. I will give you an instance. So if you look at this amount of money, you know, pledged by the government of United States to Nigeria, it has made United States government a stakeholder. And besides, United States is globally known as a promoter of democracy and rule of law.
In inter-society's view, what specific measures do you think the Independent National Electoral Commission can implement that you think could ensure the upcoming elections are free, fair, transparent, and credible, briefly?
Well, at the stage we are now, unfortunately, for our investigative finding, that is 23 pages, you know, which was released on 28th of September. From what we found in that report, you know, research report, a lot of damages have already been done by INEC. But what we are now looking at, your question goes to the point of, trying to asking us what is the way out. So our suggestion here is going to be a kind of panel beating, you know, a kind of damage control, because INEC has already done a lot of damages on the election. But the only option we have now is for the international community, including the top functionaries of the United States government, to mount sufficient pressure on INEC to ensure that the 32 million Nigerians that were registered and that have not been given PVC are issued with permanent voter's card. When we talk of PVC, we mean permanent voter's card. 32 million registered Nigerians must be issued with permanent voter's card. And again, all these supporting democracy advocacy or supporting agencies like those funding, lending funding support to INEC and the recognitions and what have you, must tie such support and recognitions on delivery of credible electoral process accountability on the part of INEC.
So what do you think prospective Nigerian voters, as well as the political parties and their representatives, do in order to contribute in ensuring their votes are protected, or to ensure that INEC administers free, fair, transparent, and credible elections?
From the point of view of our research and investigation, we can tell you that a lot of Nigerians are frustrated. The enthusiasm for the first time has been heightened. I mean, that has been very wonderful. And the citizens have continued to raise awareness and consciousness by, organizing rallies within the context of democracy, volunteerism in major cities across the country, and all that and all that. But unfortunately, as they continue to raise awareness and consciousness.
Emeka Omiagbalasi is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from Onitsha, Nigeria. Still in Nigeria, the spokesperson for the presidential campaign of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, says if elected, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar is ready to run the affairs of the country on the first day of his term. Kola Ologbodiyan says Atiku, who was former President Olusegun Obasanjo's vice president, is the right man for the job. He was a key player on the administration's economic team that's credited for the so-called glory days of strong economic growth, peace and stability. His comments come as recent polls show Peter Obi of the opposition Labour Congress will win the presidential election. But analysts say that Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, former Lagos State governor and candidate for the ruling All Progressive Congress, or APC, could win the vote due to the power of incumbency and his political skills. Kola Ologbodiyan tells me that Atiku Abubakar towers above all the presidential contestants in the run-up to the elections.
Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar was Vice President to President Olusegun Obasanjo. You recall that the administration represents the glorious days of our political history, particularly in this Fourth Republic. They had hunted for Nigerians abroad, they fought for debt relief, and they got this from the international community and friends of Nigeria. And for Atiku Abubakar, if you look at the array of presidential candidates, as we presently have them, Atiku Abubakar is that Nigerian who understands the diversities of Nigeria. He is that candidate who knows the nuances of our nation. And as such, from day one of his administration, when elected and sworn in on May 29, 2023, Atiku Abubakar will start work from the very first day.
What do you say to people who are of the view that although the campaign is saying he will be ready day one to be the president of Nigeria because he doesn't have anything to learn, that he is a serial loser in the presidential elections, he's lost several of them, and that next year's general election is not going to be anything different, and that he has that tag and Nigerians don't trust him? How do you respond to that?
That is totally and absolutely a wrong perception of the personality and the politics of our nation. Who are those contending with Atiku Abubakar today? They are regional warlords who are not known nationally or globally as active participants in the political space. Atiku Abubakar is the only person, the only candidate in our race to also work in 2023. Like I said earlier, who understands Nigeria?
What do you say to those who are of the view that the APC presidential candidate, the former Lagos State Governor, Siwa Jubola Ahmed Tinubu, otherwise known as Jagaban, others are tipping him to become the next president? Some people are saying Peter Obi is generating a lot of hype from the youth of the country who constitute a majority of the population, and that they are tired of what they call the old horses, talking about Atiku Abubakar and Jagaban, and that Peter Obi is the man to beat, with the latest polling show that Peter Obi will win with a landslide if elections were to be held. How do you respond to that?
I will advise those who hold that belief to go and study the political history of Nigeria, and I also advise them that they should stop deluding themselves. The fact that you are dancing along the streets of Nigeria does not mean that you can win election. The votes are going to come from the hinterland, not just from the cities. And as such, they are not reading the numerals very well. They are looking at people who are going around the streets and saying that in cities are drawing conclusions that they can win election. They do not understand the political situation of our nation.
Why do you think Nigerians will repose confidence in Atiku Abubakar to become the next president of Nigeria?
First and foremost, Atiku Abubakar's promise on the economy is predicated on a plan to launch a 10 billion stimulus for the non-formal sector of the economy. Atiku Abubakar has told Nigerians that he will protect them and he will secure them. He also said that the federating units, the states, the local government, will gain more strength through an amendment process, that he will remodel our educational system in a manner that at whatever level you are finishing from school, you can get employment. He's going to introduce vocational studies into the curriculum of our schools. Atiku Abubakar's plans, which he has been emphatic about, and which he has been showcasing to Nigerians, is attractive to Nigerians. Unlike many of the presidential candidates from other parties who are not talking to Nigerians, who are not discussing with Nigerians, who are not laying their plans before Nigerians, that's the situation in which they are.
Kola Ologbodiyan is the spokesperson for the presidential campaign of Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The main opposition Patriotic Front, or PFC, says its lawyers are planning to challenge in court a decision of the Electoral Commission of Zambia to proceed with administering by-elections in the Kabushi and Kwacha constituencies. The group argues that the electoral body is violating the constitution. This after the Electoral Commission announced the delayed parliamentary by-elections will take place on Friday, October 21st. But the opposition party argues that it is illegal and an affront to the constitution for the commission to organize the election while a court has ruled on a pertinent case that could affect the vote. Disqualified candidates of the party, former Foreign Minister Joe Malanji and former Lusaka Minister Bowman Lusambu, are now in court seeking to contest again the by-elections. The Electoral Commission had prevented the two aspiring candidates from submitting their nominations, saying they were the reason for the by-elections, so are not qualified to run again. For more on the PF's plans to go to court to challenge the Electoral Commission, I read Stephen Kampiungo. He is the leader of the opposition PF in Parliament.
We are concerned as Patriot Front, and not only Patriot Front. The Zambian people are equally perturbed by the impunity with which the Electoral Commission of Zambia are trying to conduct themselves. You don't even need to be a lawyer, Peter, to understand that the action of the Electoral Commission of Zambia, contempt of court proceedings, it's contempt. And as I speak to you, our competent legal team is working to ensure that Electoral Commission of Zambia is cited for contempt in the courts of law, because you may wish to know that when the High Court acted to suspend the by-elections from being conducted, there was a subsequent appeal that was taken to the Court of Appeals. And so you have got two matters pending. So it's so shocking. And we don't know where this propensity by the Electoral Commission of Zambia is coming from.
So has the PF officially launched a legal challenge, because the Electoral Commission of Zambia has scheduled October 21st as the period to hold the by-elections in both the Kabushi constituency and the Kwacha constituencies?
We want to continue to be law-abiding, even when we are aggrieved, even when we are pushed against the law. The whole idea is for us to try and remain law-abiding citizens, both as a party and as members of the Patriotic Front. And so we are going to get guidance. And I know that as I speak to you, our team of competent lawyers are reviewing and are looking at this matter, and an appropriate action will be taken sooner than later. That's as they did in ensuring that the matters were taken to court for interpretation. The action they took to prevent the candidate in the first instance was illegal. They didn't listen until the court pronounced itself as such. So we are just wondering who is really backing them to undertake these illegalities that they're engaging themselves in.
But, Mr. Kampiungo, the lawyers at the Electoral Commission of Zambia are of the view that in spite of the fact that the court has ruled, the court did not specifically stop the election from proceeding, and that is why they are going ahead. And that accusations that they be cited for contempt of court is a violation of the law itself and a misrepresentation or lack of understanding of the law. How do you respond to that?
Peter, they must check themselves first. If that's the case, how then did they conduct the elections on the initial date which was set? We were supposed to have three by-elections. One local government by-election of the local council chairperson in Luangwa, which was conducted and which PF won. Okay, these two by-elections could not take place because the court ordered so. So why are they saying the court should misdirect themselves? That they can only challenge in the court of law, not sitting by themselves in a kangaroo style and decide that no. Now, because of these independents who have decided to rescind their decision to resign, we can go ahead. They were not part of the court action, those independents. The issue of the independents was not before the courts of law. In fact, it has taken so long for the Electoral Commission of Zambia to respond to the action of the independent candidate. So that matter, insofar as the action by the court is neither here nor there. So they are not being sincere, and they're not being honest.
Stephen Kampyungu is the leader of the opposition PF in parliament. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Ugandan human rights defenders, activists, and opposition groups say they plan to legally challenge a new law that they say targets critics and opposition voices online. The groups say the new measure recently signed by President Yoweri Museveni violates constitutional provisions that protect free speech. They also say the computer misuse bill, which was passed in parliament in September, was drafted to protect allegedly corrupt public officials from criticism and from being held accountable for their actions. The new law outlines punishment for writing, sending, or sharing information via a computer that ridicules or demeans another person or ethnic group and create divisions in society. Offenders could spend up to 7 years in jail. Defenders of the law say those who use the computer to abuse people should be punished. For reaction to the law and plans to challenge the new measure, I reach Gawaya Tegule. He is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer.
It's really very simple. We've been waiting for the president to signify his assent to this bill by signing it into law. And we had promised the country that the moment he signed it, we would be in the constitutional court. So our pleadings are ready. We are good to go. It's really all systems go right now. We are marching to the constitutional court in a couple of days. I'm sure we'll be filing a petition against this, what we think is the draconian law. There has no place in civilized society anymore. And as Ugandans, we feel the road of oppression will not work against us, no matter what the cost, we shall fight against it.
What are the actual prospects of your challenge of this law in court?
By the time we decide to fight a battle, it means we are certain of victory. We know very well, and the government also knows very well, that everything they have done is unconstitutional. So we are prepared very well. We have very good arguments. The Constitution, from the very first word to the very last one, supports every bit of our arguments against this bill. So we have no doubt that our arguments constitutionally are on the right side. There is no way we can fail. The only fear we would have maybe is that of a biased bench, in the sense of being skewed towards the interests of the government, in terms of being afraid to strike down what the government has put into law. But other than that, we know we have the right arguments, we shall win.
But Gawaya, some people suggest that this law targets critical voices online. The administration has denied that there has to be sanity in the system. You can't just hide behind the computer to abuse people.
The insanity we are seeing in this country is in the head of government. And we are simply speaking out against it. That cannot make us insane. We're simply trying to put right what has gone wrong. And no amount of intimidation will silence us anyway. We are using the weapons at our disposal. What we have now is the law. We want to use the law. We don't have guns to fight. The only weapon we have is the law. We're going to use the law to devastating effect. I can assure you that every bit of the Constitution supports our cause.
When exactly do you plan on going to court to challenge this new law?
As the week begins, we shall be marching to court. By this time next week, if you call, I'll tell you we have already filed.
How are Ugandans generally reacting to this? Because I understand supporters of the NRM have been calling for this law to prevent the use of the internet, to call people names, to cause disaffection, to create tension and disunity in the Ugandan society.
I can tell you this. The majority of the people have long been tired of the Museveni administration. The only problem is that they have the guns and they have the money. So the people fear guns, people love money. And that becomes the only structural incentive in favor of supporting the government. Other than that, any sober Ugandan knows very well that the Museveni administration is on the wrong track. They are keeping themselves in power illegally. They are simply standing up against those who have the guts to tell them to their faces that what they're doing is wrong. If I tell the president he is wrong, I'm not causing disaffection against him in the country. And even if I were doing so, it is not illegal to cause disaffection against a president who is on the wrong track. As a matter of fact, it is the highest patriotic duty of any citizen who loves their country to say we want to force disaffection against this particular leader because his interests are diametrically opposed to the national interest. So what they call disaffection is in reality a euphemism, if you want. They're trying to put a soft touch onto the fact that there are thousands of people on the internet calling them out every time they go wrong. And we're not going to stop that. They cannot jail everybody. We have enough on our side to cause things to happen for us.
Gawaya Tegule is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, this Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund are meeting in Washington, D.C. this week to deliberate pressing issues affecting the global economy. For VOA reporter Ruben Chiama spoke with Samuel Nyandemu, a development economist and a senior lecturer in economics at the University of Nairobi. He began by explaining what the weakening world economy means for developing African economies.
Most of the African governments are over-reliant on the financial situation within the world markets. And this definitely is going to create a lot of havoc, given the fact that the majority of African governments are over-reliant on the foreign assistance from these economic powers. Given the fact that there are financial problems in major economies, including China, by the way, most of the resources which will have been spared for Africa will be diverted into dealing with the domestic issues. And that will leave African economies in a very awkward situation.
Are you concerned about how African governments can best manage inflation?
The only way African governments need to manage inflation is, one, they need to, first of all, cut down unnecessary public expenditures, save money, use that money to cushion the prices of essential commodities through subsidies. This also will require respective central banks of Africa to enhance very stringent fiscal and monetary policies. First of all, to wipe out extra money in circulation and a reduction of public expenditure, putting money into where it is needed most.
When you look around on the continent, are there some countries which you can say they are doing the right thing?
We have 5 countries in Africa whose models can be emulated by other countries: Mauritius, Botswana, Rwanda, and we have countries like Ghana. And then South Africa, they have cushioned themselves from unnecessary borrowing, which has made them to manage foreign debts. They are aspiring growth through production using mainly the private sector. They have empowered the private sector to be the engine of growth. And then there is this aspect of fiscal policies and serious reforms, which are making these economies to be not only strong economies within the region, but also economies with the focused vision in terms of growth and development.
And how is the situation in fragile states, Somalia, Democratic Republic of Congo, South Sudan? How is it looking?
Not only pathetic, it is wanting. Look at Somalia. Somalia is right currently experiencing the worst drought in history. Besides that, there is the issue of conflict of the Addis Ababa versus the government. Ethiopia is another country you cannot forget to mention here. The conflict between Ethiopia, Tigray, and Amhara is also another worrying situation. But all this has been compounded by the climate change, which has resulted to extended drought, which has compromised the food security in these countries. When you come to Congo, there is persistent turmoil in terms of conflict.
What sort of actions can governments take to create employment opportunities for the youth and also grow economic opportunities for women and girls?
I think there is need for African economies to embark on empowering the private sector as one of the engines of growth. There is need for serious socioeconomic reforms. There is need to develop budgets which are friendly, and that which are actually going to accommodate the youths and women. There is the issue of institutional reforms, which are critical, and good governance. Good governance is key because the majority of African economies are in bad shape because of high level of corruption. We need to enhance institutional reforms that takes into account the issue of gender, particularly women. And more importantly, African countries now need to unite together, trade amongst each other, support each other through regional economic blocks, from where they'll be able to foster the development of their respective economies.
Samuel Nyandemo is a development economist and a senior lecturer in economics at the University of Nairobi. He spoke with Ruben Chiama from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Cameroon, hundreds of displaced girls have protested the conflicts that have disrupted or halted their education. Close to 1 million Cameroonian children have lost school time in recent years due to the separatist conflict in western regions and Boko Haram terrorism on the borders with Chad and Nigeria. The demonstrators called today for better security so children, especially girls, can return to classrooms. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzekat reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
16-year-old Adama Isatu tells onlookers in Marua, a town on Cameroon's northern border with Chad and Nigeria, that she needs an education. She says she speaks for scores of other girls who were deprived of an education by Boko Haram militants. Adama says in 2018, militants forcefully took her out of a school in Kolofata, a town on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. She says a Boko Haram fighter impregnated her, then abandoned her for 3 years in a camp on the border with Nigeria. Adama said, in 2021, she was freed from the camp by government troops fighting Boko Haram. Adama's plea to have an education was broadcast several times by media Tuesday, including on Cameroon's public broadcaster CRTV, Canal 2, and satellite FM radio. The government says hundreds of girls demonstrated in several cities, including Yaoundé, Bamenda, and Kumbu in the northwest region, Boya, Kumba, and Limbe in the southwest region, and Marua on the northern border. The protests were scheduled to coincide with the UN International Day of the Girl Child. The day is meant to recognize girls' rights and the challenges they face around the world. Emmanuel Kimbi is an official of Education for All Children, a rights group headquartered in Yaoundé. He says a coalition of 20 groups organized today's demonstrations. Kimbi says Cameroon rights groups want separatist fighters, Boko Haram militants, and government troops to spare schools and allow children to have an education.
You get into a village and you see a girl of 12 years already having a child. These are children who were supposed to be in school. Those who triggered this issue recruited children, pupils, as child soldiers. We should rescue them. We should move around and preach so that people should see the essence of education, reconstruct the schools, allow the children to go to school.
Hanesson Ketong Kongi is the highest government official in Gokitunja, an administrative unit in Cameroon's northwest region, where the government says separatists have closed several dozen schools since September, when the school year began in Cameroon. Congress says the government has deployed troops to make the schools safe. He says troops will not spare anyone who wants to interrupt teaching.
Any proponents of boycott who will continue to insist on boycott should know that they have another agenda which is hidden. And therefore, woe betide anybody who will still continue to carry out campaign and sensitization for this doctrine of boycott.
Cameroon separatist groups accuse the government of attacking schools and blame the attacks on the separatists, an allegation the government denies. Human Rights Watch says both sides are responsible for attacks on schools. The United Nations says the separatist crisis that began in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions in 2016 has deprived some 750,000 children of an education, a majority of them girls. It says another 250,000 have been deprived of learning in the north because of the Boko Haram conflict. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
You've been the one, my love. Diamond walk a molly. Chinelline wash the coli. Only the girl is in KC. Kimball like a poly. Your ex-man looking at me funny. And I got it to me. Mong I'm telling you my saying goodbye. I'm giving things funny boobie. Yes, I'm song song. Marang nandaba. I can put you on. Wanna go nyala. Tangle in the mud. I'm on your smile. Speaking up a share, see him at a mile and a baby for me. As little in the morning, my kid one next week. Better tell him it's more than love this time and see your life. Belly super, begging when I wait, one will never look back. I shall pass, it's all belum tech. Cause you know I want you when you talk to me, baby. E basi fuga de chutando do quele, pelo babé, que é esse tele. Ou se quele um novo mizinho. I think it's set. Manju sumo wami kizivu tumele Fela mabuta gali na stes Talo mangi na wengi zizu angelili Kitu tanda mi Fela kunga shinti Yang sanga nisa Fana na wangi kapina beko na glelizu Kuko doktis Hati liki Kungenza ngezi Kitu tanda mi na Fela kunga shinti Yang sanga nisa Singan moba nebis Mai sanga nisa Kuko doktis Hati liki Kungenza ngezi Kitu ngibe
electricity, vibes on a frequency, yeah, till infinity, steady on a different beat. Life is not that deep, it's all about the energy, yeah, the mentality. Now you make it my heart, nobody go go sign. And you know everything I do is nobody else concerned.
Tell you for free. I'm everything nice gone back so. You see the flow, it is hard. Where you talk, it is hard.
I tell my mama, don't you worry for me. That I am good on my own. I've made my peace with my soul. And I no concern anybody who wants change them for me. I'm a certified donor. A certified donor. But I'm a stepping out the room with my head up high. All of them cameras light on me. If you ready, make we go outside. You already know it's summertime. Got daddy party on the club upside down. Make a drink and shy, oh, till I can feel my face no more. Till I can feel so nobody get that for competition. I'm gonna know her condition. Nobody can take my position. It's up for me, oh, till I hand just see, oh. So many, many talking is a good stuff. When everything nice gone, what's up? You see the flow, it is out. When you talk, it is out. I tell my mom.
I'm a logo, put in soko, gbogbo isoro re o ta ni oko, enwe o ni gbe o ni moko, omo yi ko opolo lo fin beko. Say you no like designer, abi you no like to gapa, ibigi laga ti gaga, you got to shop where te,
this is the right now.
Palazzo, jiggy, goja, for the easy, no sleeping, no no turning, bow, painting, ya, ya, mo, ya, my chi, yo, ya, mo, 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 ya, come on, come on, come
on. One, two, three, come on.
At the para, really lobby. As you can see, for overseas, then find Mr. Money all over. Be the money is going, cause so she, you love me. But what good she, Versace, but then it's you. About that group, but it's you. Put my dog up, put in your beef.
Here we go.
My
last
old TV, but yeah, put it easy. Oh. No sleeping, no one, no turning. Down, hitting, yeah, yeah, but yeah. Which one a good luck?
Which one a good luck?
Bad boy, I'm single.
Oh, wow.
20 girls a good luck. It was soon.
Girl, the massive party done the start. Everybody done the dance.
It was soon.
Girl, the massive party done the start.
Kill of come, you come, person, my town, person, with a man, boy, when I land, so.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Michael Harvey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a rooster is not expected to crow for the whole world. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.